This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.
So, haere mai, welcome to the Dunedin Otaru Sister City Society podcast. I'm your host today, Haruko Stewart, a member of the Sister City Society and a Japanese Senior Teaching Fellow of the Languages and Cultures Program at Otago University. I'm here today for our 15th episode in the studios of Otago Access Radio, located in central Dunedin. I'm right here with today's awesome guest, Sabrina Goh, a teaching fellow in the Department of Psychology at Otago University. She's the leader of the Otaiko, or a Japanese Taiko Drums Club, and has been teaching Taiko and performing Taiko for so many countless events all over the Otago region. I once belonged to the club as well, so I feel like I know a lot about her, but today I would love to get up close and personal with her to find out even more about her. Okay, Sabrina, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Ohayou gozaimasu.
Ohayou gozaimasu. Thank you for joining me today.
You're welcome.
So first thing first, I mean, I've talked about you a little bit to introduce you to the listeners, but could you please introduce yourself a bit to our listeners?
Sure thing. I'm Sabrina Goh, as Haruko san said. I belong to the Department of Psychology. I'm a teaching fellow in there, and I've been there since my undergrad. And I've been in New Zealand since 2003.
Mm-hmm. Right. For a long time.
A long time.
Wow.
Yes.
So is it like 22 years?
Yes.
Wow.
22 years. I just celebrated my coming to Dunedin anniversary on the 17th of Feb.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's great. So I really want to find this out, Sabrina. Well, we call Sabrina Sabu-chan
right.
in a Japanese way, but okay, today I'll call you Sabrina.
Oh,
so Sabrina, so it was 2003 when you came to New Zealand. Dunedin?
Yes.
To Dunedin. Okay, for the first time. Yep. So you've done your PhD and everything. So at that time, you came here as a student first?
Yep, so as an undergrad student. So I was doing a twinning program with my college back in Malaysia, Kuala Lumpur.
Yep.
So I did my first year papers technically in Malaysia, and I came and did my second and third year papers in Otago and graduated with a Bachelor of Science at Otago.
Oh, great. Yes. So you were a student. I remember when you were a student.
Yes.
Oh, my God. That's a long time ago. I mean, you still look the same.
With gray hair.
No. Let's not talk about that. So you were a lovely student.
Thank you.
And then you finished your undergraduate course. Mm-hmm. And then after that, you move on to your master's degree.
Actually, I took a break after finishing my honors. So I did 3 years of study here at Otago. And then I took a break for 2 years and worked.
Yes. Well, you feel like doing that sometimes after studying very hard, right?
Very stressful.
Yeah, must be.
Yeah. So worked for 2 years and then felt a bit better about studying again and came back and did my master's.
Can I ask you what you did as your job?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
It was, it's a support worker at a house. So it was with the PACT organization and basically support workers go to the houses where clients live and we support them. And it was stressful work at times.
Because to take care of people itself, I mean.
Absolutely, and the different behaviors. But it was nice to see things that I learned actually in person.
It's related to what you learned,
absolutely.
Right, at university.
Yeah, at that point, because I didn't do a clinical degree or I wasn't a counselor and stuff, you don't actually see this, but as a support worker I did. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it was a good experience.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
Learned a lot.
Of course. Stressful, but you learned a lot. Rewarding as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah, of course. So that was, have you just said, for 2 years?
Yes, for 2 years.
And you felt, okay, I've got good experiences, but I think I want to learn more to pursue this kind of career.
Yeah.
for a long time.
Because I knew I liked teaching.
Yeah. Oh, you are a great teacher. I want to learn anything from you.
Thank you. But yeah, I thought I liked the research that I started getting into with my late supervisor, Tamar Murakwa.
So, okay, I'm sorry.
Oh, it's okay. It's been a while. But yeah, she was looking into different types of accented speech, so how people speak English, and the different types of stereotypes and prejudice and biases that,
It's very useful for whatever you are going to do, in your career, right?
Yep.
It's very, sounds like a very useful thing to learn.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I think just going into postgrad, right, in whether it's honors, master's, PhD, I think you learn so many different skills.
Yeah.
You learn a lot about yourself as well.
Yeah. Good and bad.
Definitely.
Well, we're learning every day.
Oh, for sure.
That's great. Yeah. So you really thought, okay, I want to do a master's, and after that you wanted to do a PhD. Mm-hmm. So you did kind of the same thing. I mean, in the same area, I'm sure, but you learned another thing.
Yep. So expanded on the master's project. Basically, I was using one type of task or measure in the master's project and realized that we needed more different types of data.
Yeah.
So we carried that on with our in the PhD and also expanded on the different types of accents I use. So initially it was just speakers who were native English speakers.
Yeah.
And we evaluated their accents.
Yeah.
And then I also got speakers who English was their second language and evaluated their English accents.
Wow. Yeah. Well, I really think linguistics and languages and your psychology subjects, they're all related.
Oh, yes.
Because our students in the languages and cultures program, they do actually major in both psychology and Japanese or any languages or linguistics and our papers.
Yep.
So they're all related.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I've actually recently met a few linguistic students who were your students last year.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Oh,
in
thank
psychology.
You for taking care of our lovely students, Abu-chan.
No, they're really good. But yeah, you're right. Yeah. It's very related.
Yeah.
My research area kind of straddles a bit in linguistics and languages.
Yeah.
Yeah, linguistics and cognitive psychology.
Yeah. Great. Yeah. So when you came here to Dunedin in 2003, you were an undergraduate student. So, okay, of course, in Malaysia, you actually do speak English, right? Because you were fluent already.
Yep.
Yeah, so you didn't have to go to the language school and anything.
But it didn't sound like English here because it was a Malaysian accented English.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so when you came here first.
Oh, you speak English really well. I was like, thank you.
Well, I've been speaking English for a long time.
Yeah. But it didn't sound like their English accent, so that's why.
Well, it doesn't matter. Yeah. Even among English speakers, they've got Kiwi English, Aussie English, American English, British English.
Yep.
So English is English.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I tell my students too. Don't worry about your pronunciation. Everybody has got an accent and that makes us kind of beautiful.
Nice.
We're different. Nice.
I like that.
Yeah. Great.
Absolutely.
Great. Wow. So great, because a lot of Japanese students here, exchange students, had to learn English before they started even taking courses in the university.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was okay for you, right? It was a great start.
Yes.
Yeah. And then, you are the leader of the Taiko Club.
Yes.
So I had to talk about this. So I remember you've been in the club for a long time. Mm. So, okay, you are Ms. Otaiko. You're the history of the club. So when did you join the club?
So I joined the club in 2011.
Oh, yes. Really? I thought it was, like 2003.
No. The club was only formed in 2010.
That's right.
Yes.
Yeah.
In July. And then I joined in 2011. Yes.
But you are kind of the founder.
No.
Really? Because, you're the face of the Otaiko.
Well, that's because
oh
I've been
God.
In there for so long.
Well, I really always appreciate your, you know, devotion and contribution and, you know, determination, everything, because, you know, sometimes at one point I thought, okay, no Japanese members in the club. I feel ashamed. I mean, you are helping us and, oh, no Japanese. Oh my God. So you've been keeping this club for us. Thank you so much.
Welcome. It's my pleasure.
Yeah. So it was 2011. Mm-hmm. So it's like 14 years ago, 15 years ago.
Yes.
Oh my God. You should have a celebration for that as well. 15th anniversary.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Mm. Wow. Time goes quickly.
So quickly. I still remember. 2011, Sabrina and Taiko. Very different.
Oh my God. So when we talk about Otaiko, I have to talk about our Hanami Festival as well.
Yes.
You have been right there for us for the festival since 2010 because I started doing an official formal one. Mm-hmm. I mean, before that, I was doing that, but officially in 2010, we started having a Hanami Cherry Blossom viewing party. In case listeners are not sure about Hanami, it's a cherry blossom viewing party. It's been held in September, in the mid, I mean, depends. I mean, we have to always see, I mean, how many flowers, you know, kind of in full, you know, blossomed. So we have to see that. But anyway, in September, since 2010, the Otaiko Club people have been there, right there for us since then. Yeah, thank you so much.
I wasn't at the 2010,
much.
But...
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So you joined that in 2011. Yes. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Well, that's good to know that. I didn't know that. Henry doesn't talk about that.
Oh, my God. You know, I just thought you've been right there since 2010. Okay. No, well, it doesn't matter. I mean, it's almost... the same time, duration, the whole time since I started the Hanami Festival. Wow, oh my God. So since 2011, so you've been right there for us to join the Hanami Festival. Always like between maybe 7 and 10 or 11, kind of around that number of your lovely members join us to perform your taiko for us, for the festival. Yeah, so now at the moment, how many of you belong to that club?
We actually have a really healthy number of members at the moment. I would say it fluctuates between... 18 and 20 members at the
it's
moment.
A great number.
Really, really good number.
Yeah, not too many, not too, you know, few.
Yeah,
it's a great number. And it will look great. I mean, 18 of you. I know sometimes not everyone can join your performance, but still more than 10 people, it will look great.
Yes,
like it's
definitely.
Quite dynamic and it's just fantastic. So you are like the star, taiko star, especially in the Otago region, because what I'm saying is you're not performing taiko only in Dunedin.
No.
You actually go to Queenstown and you go to Invercargill. Mm-hmm. And how far have you been to you know, those places on the South Island?
So Otaiko has been lucky to... Well, first I have to say this. We are according to the taiko group map on the taiko community webpage, which is worldwide. Otaiko is the southernmost taiko group in the world.
Wow!
Yes. So we can still claim that. There's no other group that
that's
registered.
Oh, that's cool!
Yes. So, that's
so no
cool.
Taiko club in Invercargill?
No.
Or Stewart Island?
No. Not that we know of.
That's
no.
you? That's
yes.
you?
Yes.
Wow! Oh my God! Yeah. Have you applied for the Guinness Book and everything?
No, I don't think so.
You should.
We should. But yeah, going back to your question, Otaiko has been lucky enough to perform as far as Blenheim, actually.
Really?
Yes, and this is because of one of our old taiko members, Yoshimi. She moved up to Blenheim and she had, I think they had their sister city visit from Japan, and so she was coordinating that visit, and so she got Otaiko to go up and play
great.
With the group.
Yeah. Wow.
Yes.
So almost there to the North Island.
North Island has a lot of taiko groups. I don't
I know, but you are great. You're fantastic.
Thank you. Yeah.
So 18 of you. So and the nationalities are really just
always every year different.
Yep.
I see, oh, wow, from Australia, America, Japan. And mm-hmm. how about now? Like, now. You know, nationalities, that all the nationalities you've got.
We have a couple of members from the Philippines.
Mm.
Yeah, they've been in New Zealand for a while. But yeah, we've got members from the Philippines. We have a couple of high school Japanese students that have joined us, which is really cool. Yeah.
Oh, that's the kind of first time, right?
Yeah, so they started coming last year.
Because it used to be always, the members used to be always like Otago University related people.
Yeah.
But now, even high schoolers.
Yeah,
good on you.
So cool that they've joined us. Yeah, we've got people from the UK, Malaysia, Japan, New Zealand.
Yeah. Everywhere.
Yes, everywhere.
And could be different even next year.
Yep.
Yeah, because sometimes people stay for 1 year while they're studying and they leave, but new people come.
Yes.
Yeah, that's great.
Really cool.
And so you do practice every week.
Every week.
When do you do that?
Thursdays, 5:30 to 8:00.
Oh, the same as before.
Yep. It's always been Thursdays since it started.
It's convenient for you.
Well, I think it's just been Thursdays and everyone has made sure that their Thursdays are free. So
great.
It's worked.
Yeah. In that, well, where is it? Like in one of the rooms in
The university in Mary Hopewell Theatre.
Oh, yes. Okay. So yeah, because your venue has been changed. So I wasn't sure. Sometimes like right next to the Unipol, or actually.
The old Unipol building.
Yeah.
Yep.
So now they're okay.
Yeah.
And so a lot of people, I mean, 18 of them, if they are busy, of course, they can't make it for practice, but they try their best to join the practice.
Yes.
And I hear that you've got taiko master visiting you from Japan the other day.
Yes.
Yeah.
A couple of weeks ago, Kenji Furutate was here for 5 days and we had 3 workshops with him. This is his 5th time in New Zealand. So fifth time.
Oh, wow. That many times.
Yes,
I remember.
He loves New Zealand.
Yeah. He must love it.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
5th time. Mm-hmm. Normally, not many people will come, you know, 5 times. He must love it.
Yes.
That's great.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I was part of a member, one of the members of the Taiko Club at the time when. Oh, maybe I wasn't. But anyway.
I think we just finished when he first came.
Oh, yes. You've got a great memory. So I met him.
Yes.
So that was maybe the first time when he came.
Yep. First time he came.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then he loved it. And okay, I'll be back next year. I'll be back next year.
Yep. So he pretty much came back every year after that first time until 2020 when he was actually here in February 2020. Just before the borders closed and he had to like cut his trip short and go home.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I mean, you are my, you know, lovely guest today, so I won't really, you know, keep talking about him.
Okay.
But so he's a professional taiko drummer?
Yes, he's a professional percussionist and taiko drummer in Japan. Yeah.
So he goes around like in a tour, not only in Japan, but to New Zealand and to other countries?
Yep. So So he tours in Japan and he plays and he does collaborations with different musicians.
Wow.
He has a taiko school in Japan. I think currently he's in Zushi. He used to be in Tokyo, but now he's in Zushi.
Okay. You know everything about him.
And he started a taiko group in Taiwan.
Uh-huh.
And they're celebrating their 10-year anniversary this year.
Wow.
Yeah, and they're a professional group. They're amazing. Sorry, I can't remember.
You should join that.
No, they're very young. They're very good. They have a lot of power and energy.
Oh, like I say, you haven't changed a bit. So.
I might look young, but no.
Doesn't matter.
But no, yeah. So Kenji-san's been really busy, but he loves it. Yeah.
Mm. So when he comes, you do have a workshop with him, or workshops, maybe many of them, while he's here.
Yes.
And everybody learns new techniques and everything from him, new songs from him.
Mm.
Oh, great.
Yes.
Did you have a little concert to show it? Or
not this time. Mm. I mean, we had a public workshop and we kind of performed the song he taught us. Which is fun, but
yeah. So you've been performing quite a lot.
Mm.
I mean, I don't know how many, like I said, I mean, countless.
Yes.
So I remember you were performing for the marathon thing.
Yep.
And what kind of events, I mean, do you normally perform for?
Mm.
Yeah, like high school things, yep. events
so
too?
We have, it's a mix and it ranges from, you know, community events, like you said, yeah. like the marathon, uh-huh. or we've played at like school fairs, mm-hmm. or schools have asked us to come and do workshops for them.
Assemblies, yeah, kind of assemblies, thing too. Yeah.
Yep. And we've played from, you know, those kind of events to things like professional, we call them professional gigs because it's mm-hmm. like on stage, like annual dinners,
yeah.
and
wow.
like charity dinners and stuff yeah. at the town hall. We'll be going in a couple of weeks. We'll be going down to Invercargill for their multicultural festival, mm. the Southland Multicultural Festival.
Yeah.
So it's a community event, but we're playing on stage. So it's, yeah. still, you know.
Well, that's yeah. the reason why you're doing this, right? For yeah. the community.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And of course, we've played at many of your events and the Eden yes. Sister Society events.
Without you guys, I can't do this one.
Thank
I
you.
Need taiko. And sushi.
And sushi. Taiko and sushi.
I want to believe, oh, because of taiko, they come. But, you know, yeah, sushi can be sushi. Part of it for them to come. But doesn't matter. No. They're there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, we do have like 300 or if we're lucky, if the weather is great, we do have like 400 mm. people who are joining our Hanami Festival.
There were lots last yeah. year, even with the weather.
Exactly. Oh, my God. Tell me about it. The weather was horrible. I mean,
it was mad.
We had like four seasons,
right?
Not in one day, during two hours.
Yep.
It was like sunny first, okay, yay. Mm. And that's why I decided to go ahead with that.
Yeah.
And then it started raining. Oh, oops, okay. And then hailed as well,
yep.
right?
Yep.
But oh, we were lucky. We could, we were able to protect, you know, the taiko
yes.
drums because, you know, they shouldn't get wet
no.
or anything like
no.
that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. So right after you finish your performance, it started raining.
Yep. We brought the rain.
Oh, my God. Yeah, yeah. So it's very hard. It's a great, great one. I mean, I'm happy to see my students
yes.
and community people,
yeah.
you know, having fun together.
Mm.
So it's a very happy event.
Yep, it
yeah,
is. But, I love it. We love it. We
yeah.
love every, like, if we don't say anything about Hanami, my members would be like, have you heard about Hanami? Is Haruko-san, like, organizing it? I was like, yes, yes. She's just checking the cherry blossoms.
Yeah. That's the hardest
that
part.
That is the hardest part, absolutely.
The most stressful part.
That it is.
As much as I love organizing this mm-hmm. event, but I wish I could make my decision. Okay, this year too.
Yep.
The 15th of September, that's the day for the party. So this is a very unique event.
Yes.
For
it
which
is.
We can't really make a decision
no.
until the last yeah. minute because it all depends on the weather.
Yeah,
it all depends on how many flowers mm-hmm. are in full blossom. Well,
yep.
it has to be full blossom.
Yeah. yeah.
So I have to check, okay, maybe 30% of the flowers just, you know, bloomed.
Oh
okay,
God.
40%, 50% every day.
I love it. I know.
I have to go there
yep.
to the flowers, I mean, trees in
yeah.
front of the clock tower.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But anyway, it's a great awesome
it
event.
It is, and you do such a good job with it. So
oh, thank
them.
You.
Yeah.
But once again, without you, it's not like that. With you, it's like that. So thank you very much. So please tell me about your classes, taiko classes.
The university
because,
ones?
Yeah, because yep. I know you teach taiko
yes.
With our lovely Henry Sensei, Henry Johnson, Professor Henry Johnson, who is, like I said, the professor of the music department. Together with him,
mm-hmm.
you do teach.
Yes.
yes.
So I teach for him in the music paper.
Mm-hmm.
It's a performance paper in taiko.
Uh-huh.
And I've been doing this since 2015, I think.
Mm.
So it varies from sometimes just one student per semester to 5 to 7 students in a semester taking different levels of the paper.
Mm-hmm.
I've enjoyed teaching
yeah.
the students. It's very different from teaching
yeah.
a community group
yeah.
because they have a fixed learning goal, learning outcomes from the paper.
Yeah.
They have basically 12 lessons to learn 4 songs and 4 drills, but not just learn it, learn how to perform it.
Of course.
And I would say, I don't think I've had any student,
mm-hmm.
I won't trust my memory, but I don't think I've had any student who's had experience in taiko before. Take taiko,
uh-huh.
yeah, as a paper in university. So it's a big learning curve for them.
Yeah, yeah. Must be.
Yeah.
So do you teach theories as well?
No, just teach them the song.
It's a performing paper.
I mean, I do give them some background information because of course. Songs are, you know, some are from traditional Taiko Japanese songs.
Yep.
Some of our songs are from North America. So I usually give them the background information because all the songs that we perform have, you know, like have meaning to it.
Of course.
And that's how their performance should come across. If you're performing a serious song like Samurai, then they have to look serious.
I love
serious.
That yeah. one.
Compared to if
so
they
cool.
have to do Matsuri, which is festival, and they have to smile. And
yeah, they have to know what it is all about.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you do here and there while you're teaching techniques and everything. You do talk about the origin of that song and the meaning of the song and everything. But it's not a theory paper.
No.
It's purely about performance.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, but I think like because Taiko is part of like Japanese culture, right? It embodies Japanese culture.
Yeah.
So you have to talk about the cultural
side. Yeah.
You have to talk about the traditions that happen, even though our group is not, you know, some people will say it's not purely, you know, Japanese Taiko, because it is not. It's New Zealand Taiko.
Yeah.
But yeah, I have to talk about it.
Of course. I'm sure you are doing very well.
Thank you. I learned a lot from Henry Sensei, who is the founder of
Otaiko. Yes.
but yeah, I attended a few of his classes because he's done so much research with, you know, Taiko drumming. He's a wealth of knowledge.
Oh, I know. Well, he is my next guest.
Whoa, good.
Yeah, of course. You, Henry Sensei, I had to interview you both.
Thank you.
Yeah, so I will ask him about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know, it's really, I like teaching the students and they, and you know, at the end of the semester, they have to perform for their exams, but it's
of
a
course.
Performance. And they perform with Otaiko, they practice with our members as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's good, like it's kind of it's a really good relationship because the students get to see like a performance group and a community group, and the members get to see how the students can progress really quickly because they, like I said, 12 weeks to learn and polish their pieces is a very steep learning curve.
Oh, yeah. Of course. Wow. Oh my God. So how about this year? Do you teach this course in the first semester this year too?
I have 2 students in my 100 level performance course, and I have 3 students in my 200 level course.
Mm-hmm.
So the 3 students, I saw them last year, second semester, they did the 100 level, and then they've come back to do 200 level.
Yeah.
So it's good.
Yeah, great.
Yeah.
And I know, not only at university, at any institutions, we want to have, you know, as many students as possible for papers.
Mm.
But how many of them are the best kind of numbers for you to do a performance kind of, you know, course, paper?
I think under 5 is good for this.
Because you do really take good care of them, right?
Yeah, and they have to work together.
Oh,
so I think having 5 is a manageable number.
Mm.
Even then, sometimes they don't work together because they have to perform the drills as a group, and then they perform the songs with Otaiko.
Mm-hmm.
So it's usually getting them to have the same time to meet for practices is quite tricky and stuff.
But once a week?
Yes, we have classes once a week, but they also come for Taiko practices on Thursday evenings for the first half hour.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So yeah.
I see them twice a week then.
Yeah. I mean, you need to practice a lot, right? Mm. Just like language learning.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
not
I
only.
Remember learning Japanese in first year.
Oh, you did?
Yes.
Oh, that's right.
Yes. I learned it with Hirabe Sensei.
Oh, that's right. Oh, my God.
Yes.
You see? That's why I needed to interview her. Oh, well, thank you for giving me another topic to talk about. Yeah, that's right. So it was it 2003.
So it was
that's why, because at that time I was back in Japan. That's why I thought, oh, this lovely Sabucha, why didn't I have her? Okay.
Yes. So we did. And I learned it with, so 2 of my flatmates who I came over from Malaysia with, so we were living together.
Uh-huh.
So 3 of us took Japa 103 and 104.
Mm-hmm.
And so, as you said, practice. Mm-hmm. So it was really good. We could go back to the flat and practice after class. And,
We are trying our best to make our lectures even, not only tutorials, but lectures, you know, become interactive,
yes.
communicative.
Mm.
Yeah, and we do have a lot of activities, yes. even in lectures, because we need to do that.
Mm.
Yeah, definitely. And it's always fun to pair up with different people.
Mm.
Yeah. So do you remember Japanese? You did, I mean, beautifully at the beginning of this show. But do you remember other expressions and everything?
Remember the greetings?
Oh, that's what we need.
I can. So when Kenji was here,
uh-huh.
And he stayed with me and my family,
mm-hmm.
because my husband can speak Japanese.
Mm.
So when he was speaking to Scott, I could pick up on things.
That's
but
I
cannot say it, but I can kind of understand it, even when he's talking in the workshop.
Well, that's the most important thing.
That's helpful.
Yeah.
I can remember some my kanji.
So Scott-san, your lovely husband,
yes.
has lived in Japan, right?
Yes, he lived there for 11 years.
That's right. Mm. You see, thank you for giving me so many topics. I mean, maybe I should have another episode with you.
No.
I need one more. Wow. So he is fluent, right?
He can have a conversation, yeah. I think the first time Kenji came here,
mm-hmm.
I went to the airport with Scott and I was like, they told me that, so it was Tamashii in Auckland who organized his travel, and they were like, oh, he's not very fluent in English, so it would be helpful if you have someone who speaks Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, Scott, can you come along?
Mm-hmm.
And at first Scott was like, oh, I can't remember. I could see him like trying to...
Well, it's a while ago, right?
Yeah,
right?
And then after that, he was like, and after he started speaking with Kenji-san, he was like,
comes back.
Mm,
When we learned how to ride bicycles and everything,
exactly.
and swimming and everything, it just comes back.
It's like muscle memory.
It takes a while, but just comes back. Yeah,
yes.
Muscle memories. Yeah,
yeah, so,
that's right.
He was having some good conversations with Kenji.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Well, next time when I bump into Scott-san, maybe I should speak in Japanese.
Yes, you should. Surprise him out of the blue.
Wow, that's right.
Mm.
I mean, that's fantastic because you are meant to be together there, really.
Oh,
yes. Yeah, because you didn't know that he had lived in Japan when you met each other, right?
No. Yeah.
And
when we met each other, he did. I guess that was his intro to me. He was like, "Oh, you play the Japanese drums at university, don't you?" I was like, "Yes." So, yeah, that was our first conversation.
Was it at that time when you had a concert?
That was later, a
lighting thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that was later. Well, I met him before that.
Oh, okay.
That's how I asked him to do the lighting
thing. Witnessed you meeting each other. Okay, you had met each other before that.
Yes.
Yeah, of course, to organize the concert. Mm. I mean, the lighting guy has to meet you before the concert, of course.
But yes.
Wow.
So I guess you're right. It's meant to be.
Yeah. Oh, my God. And then, you lived in Japan.
Mm.
Oh, my God. I have learned Japanese at university, blah, blah, blah. So, oh, my God.
Yes.
Wow. Okay. And... And you are here.
Mm.
Your lovely family is here.
Yes.
And you've got two beautiful boys.
Yes, yes I do.
Please tell me about the boys. Mm. Are you, teaching other languages? Or maybe they're a little too small for that?
Mm. We do use, with Malaysian,
mm-hmm.
In Malaysia,
mm-hmm.
we use different, because there's Malay, there's English,
mm-hmm.
there's Chinese,
yes.
Indian.
It's a multilingual society.
So in everyday speaking, we use the slang words from the different languages.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I use with the boys because it comes out naturally.
Yeah.
Scott did try to teach our oldest boy some Japanese names, but he was convinced that Scott didn't know how to speak Japanese. He's like, no, that's wrong, Dad.
No, I'm sure he's doing his best.
But then he picks up the languages really quickly. And at the moment, James, so he's year one at Sacred Heart.
Your oldest son, right?
Mm, mm-hmm. And he does Kapa Haka. He loves the Kapa Haka group.
Great!
So he's
a Kiwi.
He's very Kiwi, true and true. And he's learned all the, the waiatas and stuff. And so he has all these Maori words that he knows. And they pick up language so quickly.
Great.
Mm.
And they are learning how to appreciate other cultures.
Yes, that is the most important thing.
So you tell them, you've got a Malaysian culture and Kiwi culture and Japanese culture and everything.
Yep.
Mm,
yeah.
So they are aware of you know, like having those different nationalities and cultures and languages and everything at that early age, young age.
They are learning. I remember James, because he's trying to figure out, I think he was about 3 or 4, and he was like, Mom, you're from Malaysia. I was like, yes. And Dad, you're from Dunedin. Scott was like, yeah, New Zealand, Dunedin. And I was like, yeah, James, and that's why, you know, you have some Chinese and Indian blood in you, because I'm mixed. And he was like, oh, so that means I am half Malaysian and half Dunedin. Scott was like, no, you're New Zealand. You're Kiwi. He's like, no, I'm from Dunedin.
Wow, he's got a pride going already.
But from that, to seem to understand that, you know, it's different meanings, you know.
That's cute.
They are learning.
Wow. Lucas, how about Lucas Chan?
He's just...
He's like 2 years, right?
He'll be two in May. So his language is developing now. He can speak and he's learning things. So
his first language, I mean, you had to work on first, right?
Absolutely.
And eventually he will show his interest in other languages. Yep. And that's the time when you introduce these things.
Yep,
and you know what to do. I mean, you yourself are a multilingual person. So,
Lost some of it. But yeah, I mean... I know that it's for kids to learn languages, it's really good between like 1 and 5.
Yes.
That's the best time for them.
Yeah.
And I remember learning the dialect of Chinese my dad speaks, which is Hokkien in Malaysia.
Oh, yes.
But I was never like formally taught it. I just learned it because I was with the babysitter who only spoke that language.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Because my parents had to work. And so I picked it up without like, you know, consciously learning it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's actually the best way, right? I mean, you had to survive, then you had to learn the language.
Exactly. Immersion is the best way to learn a language.
Wow. Yes. Great. Do you still remember that?
Some of it. Yeah. When I speak to my, like, dad's relatives and stuff. But, you know, the same as you said, it takes a while to kind of remember things and stuff. So whenever I go back to Malaysia, if I have to go and speak Malay, like, oh, what's that word? What's that word? Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
So do you go back to Malaysia to see your families or relatives?
Try to.
How often do you go back there?
Not very often since having kids.
Yeah.
Because it's so expensive. The last time I was home was end of 2022 was the last time we were home.
But not a long time ago. No. I mean, I know you feel like going back. You know,
like
going back there every year. But I mean, not too bad.
No.
Yeah. Because I know some people who haven't been back to their original countries for 5 years, ten years.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it costs a lot.
It does.
Right?
It really does.
How old is it? Like 2 years? When
two
you
years.
Become 2 years and then it will be a full amount
price.
Of airplane tickets.
But even
2 years?
Under two, it's like 75%. So it's still quite a lot to pay for
my
no seat.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Yeah.
So can you say, oh, I don't need it, and you have to keep your kid on your laps?
No.
You have to have a seat for one person.
Yeah. I mean,
well,
they
it's
can
dangerous.
They can sit on your lap.
Yeah.
But you still pay for the
of course, because you can't do that for like, what, 13 hours, 12 hours?
No.
Yeah.
Especially not Lucas, who is quite quite a heavy boy.
Good.
Yes. And he just learned sushi.
Oh.
James loves sushi, so he will go on sushi.
Yeah. Okay.
Slowly introducing him to
great. Also, James Chan loves sushi.
He loves sushi and he loves sashimi.
Oh my God.
He won't
knows
let me cook
what?
If I buy salmon, he won't let me cook it. He will say, I want raw salmon.
Oh, my God. He knows what's the best way to eat fish.
Yep.
Yeah, fresh raw fish. I mean, that's the best.
Yes.
And it's easy for you. Just cut them all into pieces.
Yep.
You don't have to cook.
Yes.
He's a good boy.
Yeah. So he likes that.
Wow. Mm. So you are very cook. I remember that. Yeah. We've had potluck parties, you know, several times. And you're an awesome cook. So on your table, like for your dinner and everything, what kind of food, like different nationalities kind of food, cuisine kind of dishes are there always?
Yes. So with James and Lucas, when they started eating solid food, it was a bit tough because we had to make sure that it's food that they can eat. And I didn't want to cook two different things. But now with James eating more things, it's easier. I like spicy food personally, so I can't keep cooking like, you know, like I'll cook my mom's curry.
For little
and stuff.
Kids, maybe it's too much. Yeah.
And when Scott usually makes Japanese curry, we usually do the
he
hot.
Does?
But now we do the mild. So we actually just had Japanese curry last night for dinner.
Wow. I can feel that you've been kind of getting ready for this interview. Japanese food tomorrow.
Yes, exactly.
I will be interviewed by a Japanese person.
I have to get in the mindset.
Yeah.
No, so we have things like that. And then, you know, like burgers or...
Oh, you need this kind
soup.
Of thing sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. Fish and chips. Because
why not? I mean, who doesn't like fish and chips and burgers?
Yep.
Yeah.
All the kids love them too much. Yeah. But yeah, like Scott, he's really good at cooking mac and cheese.
Oh!
But now we don't like it because James at one point only wanted that all the time. So we're cooking it almost every week and we got sick of it. No more.
I mean, I know it's delicious, but I mean, not every week.
James could eat it every week and Scott and I were like, no more.
I see.
Yep. So they've been, but we've been managing to introduce more things and get back to before kids when we used to have all the different types of cuisines and things that we like to eat.
So does Scott-san cook as well?
Yes, he does. He loves cooking and he's good at it.
He's good at cooking as well.
Yes.
Wow, that's nice.
Yes.
Yeah. Wow. And then you go out, or is it difficult to eat out with kids?
Yes.
Yeah.
We try to go out sometimes.
She was nodding very strongly, listeners. Yes.
I remember when James was little and I was like, oh, you know, I was getting, like, when do you start walking? I was getting excited about that with Lucas, like, please don't start walking. Yeah. But, you know, now he's walking around. And so, yeah, it's tricky.
That must be the hardest time.
Yep.
Yeah, two of them walking around, moving around, running around.
Yes, and both are so active all the time.
Well, it's good for you, maybe. Good exercise.
Yeah, keeps us young. But it's a bit tricky going out to eat and also choosing, again, the cuisine that the kids will like to eat. Or there'll be something for them to eat. You know?
Yeah, because, I mean, in Malaysia and in Japan as well, we do have, like, so-called family restaurants, like Denny's and all sorts of things. Mm. But... I think in Christchurch they've got one, Cameron or something like that.
That's right, they do.
Yeah, but here, don't know, Kobenko, is it a family restaurant? Can I call it?
Yes.
So that kind of place, you can maybe.
Yeah.
But still.
But also in Malaysia you have those hawker centers, you know, like the food courts and stuff.
Yes, that's
right. And so it's fine if they make noise because,
because
it's noisy in there.
Yeah,
anyway.
Well, they've got other families doing the same thing as well.
Exactly.
So you don't have to feel guilty.
Yeah. Oh, when we, we went to Christchurch, we went to, is it Riverside?
The I love that place.
I love that place too.
We need that kind of place here too, right?
We do.
Yeah, please. Yeah. I don't know to whom I should ask.
Please. Absolutely.
It's great, right? Riverside Kitchen.
Yeah,
is
Riverside
that how
Kitchen.
We
yeah.
call it?
I think so.
Yeah. The name of the market.
Mm.
Yeah, so it's basically everyday market inside.
Mm.
Yeah. It's got a nice kind of ambience.
Yes.
Yeah.
And variety.
Yes. Yes, we need it. Yeah. Well,
Absolutely.
We do have food courts here too. Yes. The Dunedin is great, of course.
Yeah. We just need to expand it a bit more, I think.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I love Dunedin. I mean, you do too, right?
Yeah.
Everything is. It's a great city. Everything is within a walking distance.
Yep.
Yeah, we've got supermarkets and, you know, shopping malls and hospitals. Mm-hmm. And not that we want to go to hospitals that often, but good to have good hospitals just in case.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And like you said, it's all in walking distance. It's not too far to get anywhere.
I know. Even university. Mm. Yeah. I mean, everything is... within a walking distance.
Mm.
Yeah. So your main teaching papers are psychology.
Yes.
So I want to, getting back to that topic.
Mm.
So you do teach, what kind of papers?
So I teach, many research papers.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I also teach a abnormal psychology. So it's linked to clinical psychology in second semester.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's my
And
area.
You supervise students as well?
No, I haven't started supervising yet.
Very busy,
teaching
papers.
Yeah.
How many students do you have this semester in your, well, you teach different papers, biggest one?
It can, the biggest one is about 200.
Whoa.
Yeah. But it's the lab component or the tutorial side of it. Yeah,
sure. Can I have them too in my courses?
<It's true. laughs> Definitely. Please take some.
Wow. So it's held in a big lecture theater, yes. Like in the St. David lecture theater.
Yeah, but I don't teach that part of the lecture. I teach the class, the lab classes, so they're smaller. So I see more practical classes, hands-on kind of thing. And then you get to know the students as well, because in those big classes, it's so hard to...
I know. Yeah, I mean, it's good, but yeah, I know what you mean. Mm. That's why students tell me, okay, I love my, for example, law papers, psychology papers. Mm. They say that, but they say, oh, but at the same time, I'm really hard to make friends. Mm. Yeah, but in language courses, because of the nature of language learning anyway, because you have to pair up and everything, so they make friends. So, I mean, both are great in different ways. Mm. Yeah. Wow. So you do have like practical assessment things for those papers?
So the assessments are usually written.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Because we want to train them how to write academically. So they have to write reports or proposals.
Then they will follow your steps, like to become a researcher, some of them maybe. Yeah.
But it is based on practical. So the labs, we get them to do practical assessments, like experiments in the sense of psychology.
Yeah.
And then they write up on the findings and stuff. Yeah.
Great. So when you were, I should have asked you this one at the beginning, but when you were in, because you are fun to have, I mean, to be with. So
thank you.
My topics are everywhere, which is a good sign, maybe. I had all those questions that I sent to you and which I wanted to ask you, but because we've been going with the flow and everything has been going so well, so that's great. That's a good sign.
Yep, absolutely.
So when you were in Malaysia, because you are such a kind person who likes to take care of other people, and you did that kind of job as well, and psychology is like that too, and what you're doing with your student is like that too. So in Malaysia, when you were little or when you were a teenager, you did like to take care of other people, do something for other people, help other people.
I think it's very I think partially is like personality wise, and then the other side is my mom and grandma. I think whenever I think about helping, my mom and grandma have modeled that, and I followed on with that. My grandma would have people in her house come in, and she'd feed them. Be people who in the community, people she might not know, and she's like, "Yep, they need food. We'll feed them and stuff." So there's always been that, and my dad as well. He's always been about doing charity, even in his work. We used to get involved, and I remember during Christmas time, we'd be packing all these toys and presents, but it's for other kids. And I'm like, where are they getting this? Then my dad would be like, cause they're from the orphanage or they need it. And he would organize these big events for kids through his work. And
You've got that from them.
Yes, I would 100% credit my parents and my grandma.
Wow. And are they still doing this kind of thing? Like
they
doing
try
something
to,
for the community?
Wow. They're old now, but
your parents, no, compared to my parents, still young.
Dad's 83 this year.
Oh, really? Oh, I mean, young, but really? Because I mean, you are much younger than me. I thought maybe your parents are like around, I don't know, in their 70s or something.
Mom is.
You see. Well, but they're well and everything.
Yes, thank
great,
you.
Good to know. Because I mean, because I understand your situation. Because I am an immigrant here too. So, only one. I mean, I love living here, but only one concern for me is to always to think about our parents and how they've been doing. They are doing, go back there to see how things are going for them.
Absolutely.
You do like FaceTime, Skype, Zoom, all sorts of
WhatsApp
things.
WhatsApp video calls.
Oh, great.
Which is good.
Once a week, twice a week. And
Quite often.
Quite
especially
often.
Especially with the kids.
They want to see them.
They want to see the grandkids. It's often or send lots of videos and pictures and stuff.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
Which is so different from, in 2003 when I came, I still remember making phone calls to home from the pay phone. You buy the card and you have to call.
Oh, my God.
And then now you're like video call anytime.
I know, for free.
Right?
Can you believe it? I mean, when I first came here to Auckland first in 1994, I mean, it cost me a lot to call my parents, international phone calls. Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. Time has changed.
Hasn't it?
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. How long have I been here? I mean, I still feel the same.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. You do feel the same, but you also realize how much has changed.
Yes, I know. And when you kind of talk about things and, oh, yeah, it was like 2000, blah, blah, 2000, blah, blah, like 2003 right? when you came here. What? 22 years ago? So all those things you think about. Mm-hmm. Remind you of that's kind of a long time ago when you think it was just 3 years ago, right? No, 10 years. Oh, my God.
Yep, exactly.
But, you know, you are such a lovely, positive person. This is kind of the beginning of 2026. Mm-hmm. So I would love to ask you, like, what your plans are for your family, for yourself, like what you want to do, what you want to achieve, anything. Mm-hmm. Doesn't have to be, like, a serious New Year's resolution, but any kind of plans for you for your family for this year?
I think one of the biggest things we want to achieve is trying to get back to Malaysia.
Yeah.
I would like to take my family back, especially Lucas, who hasn't been back and not met my sisters and brothers and his cousins. So, that would be a great achievement at some point.
Of course, because you've been seeing each other like on WhatsApp, Skype or whatever. It's different from, you know, talking to them in person, right?
Very, very different.
So they must be so excited.
Then they'll get to experience the culture and the food, which is...
Oh, my God. Can I come with you?
Please come.
Yeah, as an auntie or something. Maybe as a grandma.
No, auntie. Auntie Haruko.
Oops. Older sister? No. I'm getting a little bit too, I don't know, greedy, too demanding to call myself your kid's elder sister. No. Grandma.
Auntie.
Okay, thanks.
Yes, not grandma. But yeah, that's my hope for the family. And then for work and personally, I would like to grow my teaching fellow responsibilities. Mm-hmm. So I've been looking into a lot of research about teaching and the different types of ways we teach and how to reach students. Like, you know, we are in the age of technology, right?
Yes.
They rather watch and listen to recordings rather than coming to you in person. So how can we change that? Or how can we better teach them if they want to use that kind of media?
Mm-hmm.
Great.
You know, I totally agree with you. I've been teaching languages, I mean, for a long time, but I never feel like, okay, I'm great. I'm, you know, this class is perfect. Not like that always. Every day I have something that, oh, I should have done this maybe this way.
Yeah.
In a different way.
Yeah.
I mean, but we have to feel that
way,
right?
Yeah. You're just going to become stagnant and you're not going to grow.
No matter how long, how experienced you are, I mean, teachers do actually always think about, you know, improving, making even more progress with our teaching.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you must be a great teacher.
Okay.
Yeah, I can see that. Your personality shows that you are a great teacher.
Thank you.
Yeah, and you love teaching.
I love teaching, definitely love teaching.
Talking to people.
Talking to people as the students, I mean, sometimes obviously they'll drive you mad, but it's so rewarding, right? You go into a class, it's 50 minutes and you help share your information and your knowledge with them. And then when you see them feed it back to you and understand it, then you're like, you know, that's great. Mm-hmm. Even if it's just one or two that you've gotten through.
And it's rewarding to know that when they say, you know, oh, I've learned a lot from you and thank you. And I mean, you are not doing that. We're not doing, you know, that for teaching, for being praised or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But we are humans, too. Yeah. So when we hear that they've enjoyed our courses and they've learned something from us, I mean, it's such a rewarding feeling. And it's a great feeling, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then it makes us think, OK, I want to do even better.
Mm. It's a good cycle.
Yeah,
good
it keeps us going.
Mm,
yeah.
Definitely does.
Well, it's a very positive ending, wrap up. Wow, I really need one more hour, definitely, or 2 hours with you. Yeah, I mean, 10 hours even. But you know, well, it's time to say sayonara now. Sayonara. And time flies when we are having fun, right?
Yes.
So I wish I could keep chatting with you more, Sabu-chan. I really had a great time with you, Sabu-chan.
Thank you, Haruka-san.
I hope you've enjoyed listening to Sabrina's exciting stories. Thank you so much for joining me on the show today. This show is played on Otago Access Radio in Dunedin on the airwaves, 105.4 FM and 1575 AM, and also on its website or ORR.org.nz. You can also listen to us online through your favorite podcast app, including Spotify and Apple Podcast. Just search for Dunedin Otaru Sister City Society Podcast. That's Otaru, once again, spelled O-T-A-R-U. Be sure to join us again on Monday, the 20th April, for a very special show. お聞きいただきありがとうございました。またね。または。See you soon.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.